Hey, just a disclaimer before we start this episode, we will be talking about spoilers for Episode 9, The Rise of Skywalker.
And cats.
Enjoy.
What they wrote. Welcome back to the Droids You're Looking For, a Star Wars podcast, instant reaction podcast to The Rise of Skywalker, alongside Ryan, Sam, and Chris. I am Mike, and here we are. We have just finished the film, Alamo Drafthouse in Brooklyn, where we watched it and
everyone
had...
walking by knows exactly who we are.
It's very awkward. It's very difficult.
Somebody's actually mugging me right now.
They don't know where the droids you're looking for, but they know exactly our personalities and the kind of people we were in high school.
Somebody's shoving me into a locker right now.
So here we are, and I think let's just go through and do very brief reactions. I will begin, and I'll say that obviously we always come with a little bit of baggage, knowing that what we did coming into this film, we were concerned about some of the things, we worried about the retconning, and very early on in this movie, it was clear to me what they wanted to do, which was say The Last Jedi was not the way they want to go with Star Wars, and they decided to retcon it, and they decided to do it very openly in moments of dialogue, in choices they made with the film. Palpatine, parent, grandparent, of Rey, or all of the things that happened in this film, I couldn't enjoy most of it because it was so clear that this is what they wanted to do. And that was my main takeaway, and I hope that on future viewings I can have a lot more fun, but I was out. I was just completely out and wasn't able to even have some fun with it.
I'll be the voice of reason here. First off, I'm glad to be alive here at the end of all this.
Congrats.
As someone who was also concerned that they'd be retconning and undermining everything from The Last Jedi, I'm here to put all of your worries at bay. Those aren't even the beginnings of the biggest problems with this movie. So this is truly, I mean, we're going to talk in more in depth about this. I've never come out of a Star Wars movie feeling like this. This is a foreign feeling to me. All the prequels, even Solo, I came out kind of just being like, whatever. But like, this is the first time I'm coming out negative. I don't know if that's going to change, but we'll see.
Guys, Solo was a blast from start to finish. I said it before, I'm saying it again. In between, I think you know how I've sort of soured on that movie. I do wanna make sure to really share some positive stuff.
You covered it. That was it. That was the positive stuff.
I'm glad I saw this movie. I am looking forward to how I feel this settles over time. The stuff I loved was, I thought there were some great performances throughout. I like the casting, both JJ's casting and that original cast. Like, you know, they got it right. It's something they've always had right, and I think there's a lot of energy behind some performances where I had some story or dialogue issues. There's also, like, visually some really fun stuff, and I had a few genuine, like, genuine laughs in the movie, which, at the end of the day, is a big part of, like, what we come to Star Wars for. But I do think, I mean, it's interesting. There's four of us here that have really had some incredibly like high highs over the last few years doing this pod, and there's definitely a little bit of a feeling of like deflatedness right now, and I'm really, I guess, hopeful, kind of optimistic that on repeat viewings, as we, you know, set as this settles into the long game of history, I hope it rises in my estimation,
pun intended.
Did they say rise in that movie? Did they say rise? I didn't catch it.
Like raise
during that baking scene.
Great. No, but you know, Daisy Ridley, Adam Driver, Oscar Isaac, you know, terrific actors. Billy Dee Williams, God bless him, absolutely love him. I'm looking forward to getting into it more in the coming weeks.
One word: Babu Frick. Hero, savior of the movie. I really like that. I think what I have done is I've heeded the message of The Last Jedi, where you can't put your faith in some kind of savior movie to come at the end. I think I'm taking the movie for what it is. I enjoyed my experience. I ate a lot of sugar. I had a pretzel, a cookie. It was surprising how like blatant it was, I think. But at the same time, to me, my first reaction was that George Lucas wrote this movie. It felt like a prequel. It felt kind of crazy and weird and like choices that I didn't expect. So I think from that perspective, it wasn't like a direct nostalgia grab. I think they were making some bizarre choices. I think I was happy to see how much fun Billy Dee Williams was having. I really enjoyed Kerry Russell's character. I think there's a lot to look at in this movie. It's very dense, but it's also kind of like it's like a layered, one of those weird cookies that you see in an Italian bakery that's like chocolate and then like three layers of cake.
A tricolored cookie.
Yeah. It's like one of those. It's sweet. It's not that good for you, but it has different layers in
it.
Again, I ate a lot of sugar during this watching this movie.
You said crazy, all over the place, discombobulated, and the first, 20 minutes of that were certainly all over the place. We've talked about the pacing, usually spectacular in a JJ film. The propulsiveness of this, all I was thinking during the beginning of that was, if we make this quick enough, if the story's fast enough, no one will realize that we don't know where we're going with all of this.
Sam said that JJ's stories shoot you out of a cannon, and I think this one may have exploded on impact.
Gone through our landing point.
I honestly need to think about it more, and I haven't fully evaluated, but I'm almost reacting differently, that it's like, I know what you mean by like the insanely quick cutting and like chaotic nature of it, but I almost feel like this movie had no propulsiveness for a very long time, which was frustrating to me. There was aimless wandering, there was pointless going somewhere. I go back to the classic to me shot out of a canon JJ movie is Star Trek 09 or The Force Awakens, take your pick. And they start with one incendiary spark and it just launches you and everything follows on what immediately came before, which is why his movies can lead you to, you don't always remember the whole way back, but you're always knowing why you're doing what you're doing, and that's brilliant. And that was not present in this movie, maybe ever, but certainly not for a very long time. And it was, that really did sort of break my heart, because that was the one thing I thought, if there was retconning, if there was some quote unquote course correction or course redirection, I thought, well, at least it's going to be leading me by the nose and I'm going to be thrilled. And that didn't happen. There were moments I enjoyed, you know.
I feel like if they were even going to go that route, then it should have just been fan service after fan service. Like, if you're going to do that, then
it's a fair amount.
Then you, but I mean, just go for broke. Like, I wanted to see physical representations of Rebels characters.
Where's Ahsoka? I thought we might see Ahsoka. I thought we were going to see Ezra. When every ship came in, I thought, here we go. We're bringing everybody from every corner of the galaxy. Resistance is going to be in this.
Don't worry, I'm going to be taking that shot and putting it into 10K so we can see every one of those ships.
Well, you know, the one cameo we did get, Wedge Antilles was in...
Also Warwick-y.
Yes.
Wicked A. Warwick.
Yes. Oh, yeah. That's true. But I think that was more so thinking of that scene with all the different ships.
Sure.
The fact that Wedge was there. I love that. That was a great moment. It made me smile.
I don't think Billy Dee Williams should have been in this movie. I like him. He seems to be having a good time. Nothing against Billy Dee, but like, come on,
There was nothing to his character in this movie. There was no story there.
Why? He's 90 years old now. Why is Lando wearing the same outfit? It's just silly.
That was weird. That didn't feel like a JJ choice. That felt like a Disney choice.
Even Han, who was also sinfully old, was wearing a different outfit at least.
Yeah. I forgot he was in the movie.
I'm talking about in The Force Awakens. Oh, he was wearing at least a new jacket.
Same jacket in this one too.
We're getting into some detailed stuff. Yeah, I think we can. Yeah. We're gonna do a full deep dive. With all the details coming. But while we're literally here, we're gonna record independently for that part. So any just last sort of final operating thoughts.
I do want to say that I was concerned about the retconning, and then we got the retcon. I never for a moment that I thought they'd take it to an even another level, which was not only is Palpatine in this movie, but Palpatine being related. And we're trying to be a little bit quiet as people walk by us, for those of you listening. But Palpatine being the grandfather of Rey felt so far beyond what I would have expected them to do that I kept on almost waiting for a course correction within the movie. Yeah.
They needed the big old horn for that shoe.
That was the biggest retcon that bothered me. I think the one that got under my fingernails.
Oh, I think I know the one you're talking about.
Was about don't throw the lightsaber, which felt like a slap in the face. I think it's pretty a pretty bald like offense again. You know, pretty bald accusation censure. like a bald censure of the last of the last Jedi. I have all my hair.
Well, I don't it's, say him.
and that, you know, that really bothered me. But I will say there were elements that they kept from that they took forward from The Last Jedi, and the one thing that I did like was that they kept certain elements of like the Force communion, the Force conversation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I thought they used it appropriately in this movie. And there was one moment in particular that was one of the moments that I felt was like celebratory, like worthy and like really exciting. It comes late in the movie. I won't spoil it just yet, but that was a high for me in that movie.
Anybody get any Justice League vibes? A little Chris Terrio action in here.
Just with the darkness and the clouds and the lightning, it felt very DC.
Well, I guess the reason that I even say it is because of the choice of the moment where Leia says Ben through her Force connection felt a little Martha to me. Sure. That's why I brought up Justice League.
Sure. Yeah. He loves people saying names.
Yeah, that was a lot of the movie. Also, everybody was like getting up, falling down, and then you're like, wait, what? Oh, they got up again. Wait, what? There was a lot of just like fake deaths. They weren't
describing life.
Who would have thought?
I'm describing my morning.
Zombie characters in Star Wars.
At the beginning of this week that I would have liked cats more than Star Wars. I'm just kidding. I didn't see cats.
Yeah, but you know, we will.
Hey, we will.
Ryan and I are gonna go see it together.
I think The Last Jedi prepared me for moments like this, and I'm just going to take that.
Now we're going to really gather our thoughts and go at it.
The Last Jedi concluded the saga to me. I will say one thing that was a pleasure tonight was to be with all of you
same.
To be here and actually... Yeah. I think I would have had a lot harder time with this movie if I wasn't talking about it with the droids. And as much as there's maybe negativity and some disappointment here, it is a world of difference to be talking with you three fine fellows, and I will cherish that.
Home to an empty apartment where you could talk to us from there.
Yeah. Still got you out.
Yeah, just remember, we made it through Attack of the Clones. We can make it through this.
You know how I feel about statements like that.
Well, we will talk to you more, actually, probably just in a mere moments, as this episode will pick up.
Instantaneous with them.
All of you, it will seem like just a moment, but for us, we'll get there eventually.
Yeah, we're going to cut, like, the stuttering over bald a bunch, right? We're going to cut that?
No cuts.
No cuts.
You know how you feel about bald people.
You held a press conference.
Well, the pod continues onward. Right now.
And we're back. Seemed like absolutely no time for you, but for us, it was a couple of minutes there where we weren't together.
That's
and
called
here we
podcast
are.
Magic.
Maybe a little bit easier to hear us. We will not be trying to keep our voices low to spoil for those walking through the mall that we were standing in afterwards. But now we can talk a little bit more about The Rise of Skywalker. The saga has concluded.
Stop talking about bald people.
We should say, I mean, well, it'll be in the episode title, and if you've listened to the opening, you know this, but another warning, we're going to be talking spoilers.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's...
Did we give a warning up top? Like, I mean,
no,
we're going to need to record one.
No, but it'll be in the episode title.
Yeah, we'll put it in the
episode
title.
I think you need to have it in recording at that.
I don't feel the need to hold people's hand like that. If they're listening to the podcast, they should be able to read...
And Sam, when I say instant reaction,
well, audience,
it's pretty clear where we're going.
Okay. Well, audience, if you agree or not, because we are recording this part of the pod, you got to peek behind the sausage. So,
if you're
If you agree that we're not holding your hand as you listen to this.
If you're infuriated because you listened to this pod and were surprised by the rampant spoilers, you know to tweet at Ryan and Mike and accept Chris and my sincerest apologies. Yeah. We tried.
As we continue our conversation.
I'm in some kind of mood.
As we continue our conversation, I mean, can you spoil a movie that's not actually a movie?
No.
Whoa. Oh, yikes. Okay. Gloves are off.
I let that come out of your mouth, Mike, but I said it right before we started.
Are you talking about Cannavale here? What is this?
Well, to be honest, I was about to lead into talking positivity for a moment, and I just went down the opposite road. I gave in
to the
dark side.
Were you going to talk about the... You know, the corporate synergy of having Baby Yoda heal someone on The Mandalorian 2 days before it happens.
I really was.
It was so upsetting. We all noticed that, right?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Let's introduce a Force power in the story, in the side story, and then have it show up in the film. I mean,
it could have just shown up in the movie. I was fine with it.
It
would have
been fine. Right.
Now we've also.
It was overused in the.
So let's focus here.
Focus, it was overused focus in the up. Movie. You know, I think I don't really know where to continue the conversation at this point. We've talked about our initial reactions. We spoiled the movie for you. Thank you. You're welcome. But at this point, I would say I want to talk maybe more about some of the things that we did enjoy, just because I think we were a bit harsh. Yeah. What were fun, some of your fun moments? I think we did say Babu Frick kind of universally enjoyable.
Yeah.
Carrie Russell in a turn where we didn't get a whole lot about her, but her character's costume was great. I liked that we found out a little bit more that Poe has a history where he was not part of the Resistance, and I could have, you know, used a little bit more of that story.
Yeah, it turns out he was a spice runner in Frank Herbert's Dune.
Ryan. Your wife Nicole and I were talking, and my wife Rachel. The three of us were talking about one of the things we really liked was it was like a subtle thing, but I really did enjoy the that they cut a little loose with Oscar Isaac, and they let him play up the sort of the old romantic a little bit of that Han Solo charm, but they did it in a way that was really, I thought, really pretty progressive and respectful, where it was like, rather than stealing a kiss from Carrie Russell or saying I could kiss you, he asked, can I kiss you? Mm-hmm. And she said no, and then there's a sort of revisiting of that moment where at the end of the movie, you know, as they're all celebrating the triumphant victory of the Resistance, you know, Poe kind of, he sees her again, he gives her a look up and down, and kind of like, you know, It's a very broad acting moment where Oscar Isaac is great, and he kind of looks like, hey, you want to get out of here, get a room, and she kinda, like, again is like no, and he's like fair enough, you know,
right,
great sort of plays against the tropes of like toxic masculinity.
While still
allowing him to be a bit of a charmer, you know.
I agree.
A little bit of a swashbuckler.
I agree 1,000% there. They did that. I mean, okay, we've listed a lot of the negative qualities, and I had a nice little ride home after I found where I parked my car.
Just for all you pod listeners who are curious how Chris gets to a movie.
Yeah. I was kind of thinking of this. I think we need not to forget that it is a very positive force. We have this ability to watch it from movie to movie and know if there's the term retconning happening and these kind of shifts. But I think ultimately, overall, it is a movie that has a positive message that respects people and humanity. And I think the world's better for having it. Is it the story that necessarily we all wanted to hear? I mean, that's a personal preference. But I think there are moments like that. There is progressive dynamic casting in this movie. I think it is a force of good, ultimately. There are worse movies.
I agree with you, Chris. I guess to me there's going to be...
I don't disagree with any of the points you made.
Yeah. Right. I mean, we can disagree with the movie. I'm just saying, let's not forget that.
Yeah, I agree. I agree that I thought that the the steps that they're taking in terms of representation on screen are good. I mean, I don't think that they're necessarily fully there yet, but they're good steps, especially in a movie of this size. And those are forces for good in this world. Like the Poe Dameron thing, I thought that was very good. It was, like you said, Sam, and like our wives said, it was kind of like subverting that trope, which I thought was good. Honestly, boys, you're gonna have to help me through this. This is a weird experience for me. I've never walked out of a Star Wars movie feeling like this, truly. And like, it's a foreign feeling for me. I'm a person who walked out of every prequel loving it. That even like movies that I didn't love, like Solo, I was like kind of like rolling my eyes at this. Like, I really have problems with it, and it's an issue for me to talk about because I have so much associations with trolls on the internet complaining about Star Wars, and I certainly don't want to start sounding like that.
Right.
It is weird to be on the side of, one of the things I was going to bring up was like, is what I'm feeling tonight in terms of, you know, I don't feel like this represented what I've liked in the new trilogy. I don't feel like this was a continuation of what I've enjoyed in Star Wars. It didn't feel like my type of movie. And I was like, is that what people have been saying and feeling with both Force Awakens and particularly Last Jedi?
I'm gonna
comport myself differently. I can tell you that, you know.
What I think the difference is in terms of what we've been talking about. And I'm certainly not trying to be like, the difference is we're right. Like, it's but like the issues I have with this movie are like with construction mostly. It's like it has less, and I don't necessarily just mean like staging and editing and things like that, though I have issues with that. It's that like none of the core ideas of the movie to me were that much of an issue, but how they were executed on a moment to moment basis added up to a completely flat experience to me.
But to me, some of the core decisions of the movie, and I guess maybe they did seem core to it, were to refute The Last Jedi. And
yeah,
when that
I mean,
is
like,
a decision,
it's certainly not the things I would have chosen, but yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, sorry. but if when that's a decision, that bothers me. And I going back to your concern about sounding like a troll, I would be concerned about it as well. But none of us, despite disliking this film, or if we, you know, weren't a big fan, are going to spend the next year or two hating people online and doing things that would cause people potential pain because we didn't like this. We're going to be animated.
Yeah, I'm certainly
we're
gonna not going to be subtweeting Kerry Russell.
Right.
About
right,
how
right.
upset I am.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's what separates. Yeah. You can go, everyone is allowed to dislike a movie. You're allowed to talk about it. It's the fun to now have this conversation. But to make it a point where you want to take any kind of shots at people and have a way to potentially connect with them in the new world that we all live in is why we're not those people. And that's fine. It's good that we're not that, and we can still be, you know, negative about or disappointed in a film.
Also, I need to say, I didn't find anything like overtly offensive about this movie. We had a few friends with us, and one of our friends, she said, like, she was like, I loved it. And I was like, I'm genuinely glad that you did. I wish I did.
Oh,
also.
Who loved it? I didn't even, who loved it?
Well,
we don't need to name people.
No, I'm actually now I'm worried that I live? Insult. Now I'm worried I'm insulted. I insulted somebody.
Well, I'll tell you.
Well, that's. I mean,
I will tell you this. They said they were very insulted
at the beginning of the pod. Those people also insulted.
No, but I think that I'm not like, this isn't a thing where I'm like, this movie was offensive, and it, like, if someone liked it, that really bothers me. You know, it's to me, I'm just like, man, like, I wish I loved it. But
well,
there was things stopping me from loving it.
I know what you're saying, Ryan. Like, I wish I liked it more. You know, I think it does get tricky because I do start to question like why people loved it. And I guess that's just like a slippery slope, right?
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's what gets you into like the troll arguments when people were really harsh on the movies that we loved for, you know, and hating on them for what they saw as like forced progressive politics and things they didn't want in their movies, which is a whole other debate. But like, there is something to me that was like, I thought that there were certain, there were a couple of lines in this movie that for all the press about, you know, honoring and appreciating Rian Johnson's movie, for all the attempts that they did choose to bring over from The Last Jedi into this movie, you know, the way the Force is used and everything, there were at least two or you know, three instances where it felt like an active choice to either in dialogue or like directly presented on screen countermand choices that were made in that movie. And it's like that I could see people celebrating who didn't like that movie. And when you start getting into why, I guess I've answered my own question. And the lesson is like, maybe I don't want to get into why when I start learning about people liking or disliking it. And I need to take a Zen approach of like, cool, you liked it. Cool. You hated it.
Well, here's, you know? Here's the thing. And I was talking about this, off mic earlier, but okay. So a lot of has been made that, JJ had an idea for where the trilogy would go, and then The Last Jedi kind of threw that off course, and now they've been left to pick up the pieces, right? The thing that's odd about that is that it's like, well, like, it's not like The Last Jedi was made in a bubble, so, like, why wouldn't that be communicated if they knew where the story was supposed to go? Whatever. But, so, The Last Jedi happens, throws it off course. These are people, JJ or whoever they wanted to get to make the movie. And I'm not saying that making a movie is easy. I know, especially something like this, it's incredibly difficult to make a good movie. But these are professional storytellers. This is what they do. They have every resource at their availability. So it's like, if it threw the plan off course, make a new plan. Don't try and, like, jerry-rig it at the end to make it fit what you originally had in mind 5 years ago before you even made the first movie.
Well, and so, I truly question, like, what was the original plan for her parentage? If that this movie really hinges on it, it seems like there was a fundamental difference in philosophy between Johnson and Abrams, in that Rian Johnson took the choice, which we all, I think, really, really latched onto and loved, which was that anybody can be a hero. A hero can come from anywhere. It is not dynastic bloodlines only who rule the galaxy. And J.J. Abrams seemed to take the approach of, like, the hero is someone special, and that there are these mythic, you know, families, and it was more of that type of myth, right? And those are both valid story types. They are both things that exist, that are tropes, that, you know, are both very much in the realm of what Star Wars can play in, and they clearly had different opinions. But I'm like, well, who was in The Force Awakens, who was Rey's, like, of what lineage was she? Because I really doubt it was Palpatine. I'm like, was it Snoke? Mm. Was it Skywalker? Was it Kenobi? If it was Palpatine, that floors me. That absolutely
floors
me. Well,
it's like, if Palpatine was originally supposed to be the big bad the whole time, why was Snoke the big bad in Force Awakens?
Yeah.
You know? Like, why was he even introduced then?
It was a little odd that they're just like, oh, yeah, and you just, like, you have your last name, too. They're just like, yeah, you're Palpatine. Remember? Like, Carl and Steve, they're it was a little
Carl,
odd.
Carl, Steve, and Sheev.
Yeah, like, I don't understand. That's a little odd. I mean, I don't know. I keep thinking back on this. I think we have such a microscopic lens on this thing. I'm trying to really hard to, like, pull myself back a little bit and just see it for what it is. As far as them making conscious decisions to say we're going to undo what Rian Johnson did, I don't believe that's the case. I think it's them doing...
I think you're being really generous, Chris.
No, let me finish the thought. I think it's them doing what they want. So it's not a matter of them actively choosing to say we're going to change this. I think it's them... They threw more lightsabers in the water in this movie than they did in Last Jedi. I think that they are actively trying to do what the story that they want, and that's probably what the ones that audiences, that majority or minority or whatever part of the audience was asking for, that they thought would be the broadest stroke to give. So I don't think they're saying what Rian Johnson did was wrong. I mean,
I don't think you write a line that they did where it's like you treat this weapon with respect. I don't. That's
well, that's
not exactly
that's
what
Luke.
Line.
That's Luke. That's Luke changing. He changed. He threw it in the water before. Then he realized the error of his ways, and
he realized
came
the error
to...
of his ways because people didn't like the movie in the mind of this writer.
Well,
and
no,
mind
I mean,
of,
I'm just, like, I'm just I'm saying not, that I saw that as a, I saw that as the dynamicism. Like I saw that as Luke now realized that yeah, this is a weapon that you have to train to use. I think that's
oh,
how
wow.
I read that.
I can't.
Can
see
I talk
it that
about
way.
Why that was the worst scene in the movie?
I can't. Well, yes, but I
because
do want to say
of his hair.
Yes.
Well
his hair was terrible.
It was a horrible
so,
wig.
I'm not saying that like on its face it's the worst scene in the movie. However, from like a from a dramatic standpoint, that scene completely dissolves any of the drama it would have moving into the climax of the movie
mm-hmm.
by having Rey make the decision she needs to make in the Palpatine room before she even arrives there. And the
right.
reason that scene is there is because people hated The Last Jedi and they needed to put something in with mm-hmm. Luke Skywalker being the Luke Skywalker that everybody quote unquote is used to.
Nah.
So Mark Hamill doing his like back to normal bad Mark Hamill acting. That he that was not present in The Last Jedi, doing this very like hammy, like
right.
you could tell that he's like so thrilled because this is the Luke he wants to be.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're putting that scene in there, it to pander to an audience. It's so painfully obvious because it truly does detract from the arc of the movie. It's only there because it's like how would she get to Octo?
Well, I was almost gonna text you guys at the beginning of today. I was like. She's definitely going back because everything kind of got out of whack with this new trilogy, right? Han Solo is Obi-Wan, Luke Skywalker is Yoda, like everything. But then when you do that, there's no other place to go. So then things kind of fall apart if you're trying to do that like parody. I was gonna text you. She's definitely going back to Octo. I was banking on her reaction to discover that Luke was gone. Like, I thought she was going to come back and see that, like, he was gone and then learn that that's, like, a thing that happens.
Oh, that, like, that, in terms of the physical disappearance of, like,
yeah,
a,
like,
you know,
I thought she was
going
to come back. Yeah, like, I thought that would have been a better way to handle that. Like, she didn't know where to go. She runs back. If they're going to just copy the movies, then do what Luke did. He went back
right.
and he went to Yoda and Yoda disappeared. But this would have been her going back and seeing a pile of clothes and been like, what? And then find the lightsaber.
Yeah, I guess the reason... And also that scene exists so that, in a low-key way, Luke could be like, what I did in the last movie wasn't a good idea. So, like, despite the fact that the lesson of that entire movie
I didn't get that. I did not have that thought.
Oh, well, I did, and it's right. No, I'm joking, but it's I truly do think that is like why that scene is there because
and
it's
I don't
it
know
it takes
if I,
all of the tension out of her going to Palpatine.
I don't know
you
if
know
it's
she
the,
is good she stays good she'll be good.
I agree that the idea of Rey's temptation to the dark side didn't hang for me, you know, like Luke's story in the original trilogy, this temptation of the power of the dark side, that, you know, it makes sense because every time everything he's ever seen, everything he's ever done, throughout his growth and journey, it's like, well, the guy using the dark force is better and stronger and more mm-hmm. powerful, and he beats him. And so it's this idea of, like, you kind of buy in that Luke could be... And also, he's desperate, and the rebellion is failing, you know, or
well,
ostensibly
that's...
failing. So that all makes sense, right? And then what they do with Rey is that it's like she's afraid she'll become... She's afraid she might become dark or be dark, and she has some dark... Apparently, the dark force is also something that's apparently now like past, like it's inherited. It's a trait.
Well, the interesting thing about what you just said is that, and I'm not trying to be one of these people that it's like it should have been
one
more
of
like
the interesting things I just said.
No, but like so in Return of the Jedi, when Luke's like dealing with what's when they're, you know, when he's with the Emperor and Darth Vader and he's being tempted by the dark side. The idea of him being tempted by the dark side is him letting his anger take control of him and thus slowly corrupting his own soul. Mm-hmm. It's not this thing where like,
It's not Rey like a functional, it's not a functional, yeah, it's not a functional plan, right? It's not
right.
Like...
Rey seems to go to Palpatine afraid that she'll have some kind of compulsion
right
to become dark by default. There's no like character struggle shown within that, which I think is a disservice. And I have to say that Daisy Ridley and Adam Driver are doing miraculous work in this movie with like nothing given to them.
Yeah, there's some glances and looks and kind of reads of scenes that are very powerful, just like coming out of their faces.
Yeah.
I mean, Adam Driver is like, he's the guy.
You mean he's the guy who had to do everything with no lines in the last 45 minutes of the movie? he didn't say anything since I think he said dad with Han Solo. He has nothing else that he says in the remainder.
Talk about something that I how did you guys feel about that? That was painful. I did not need Han in this movie.
I thought that Adam Driver did beautifully, but I didn't think the scene was good.
I was surprised that I was kind of happy they kept a little under the hood secret.
I did forget. Yeah, you're right, Ryan. I agree that his performance was like Adam Driver's performance.
Ask you this to your point of we haven't really seen Rey like be pulled by the dark side.
Yeah.
Do you think if we had watched the original trilogy as they appeared, we would have had a similar thought? Just because we were told for 15 years that Darth Vader was evil and he had the most evil powers. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
That was a narrative that we were given for so long. And then we all knew that Luke could be swayed to the dark side, not even having seen the movie.
The honest answer is possibly. Possibly.
So, you know what I mean? Like, contextually, we have a way different Star Wars experience where it's like, those are the facts that, like, if you look it up in the movie, I mean, if we watch the movie, it might be like 3 minutes worth of discussion.
Yeah, that's extremely possible that that is,
you know what I mean?
The case. Yeah, yeah.
That's why I enjoy the prequels more now. Maybe that's why everyone enjoys like
because
the original.
Because it's so spelled out.
Because like you get these like moments. Given to you through the culture of Star Wars rather than the movie itself.
Right.
Well,
that's interesting.
I mean, it is interesting. I would say that I do think in the original trilogy, when we're watching Luke, I do think there's a palpable pull to the dark side in Return of the Jedi, and I think it's late in that movie. There's a lot of people who talk about, oh, and then I think there's like conflict and like impatience in Empire, which, you know, is at risk for pulling, you know, and they're telling you it could pull him to the dark side. But in terms of the idea that people make the case and I sort of see it now that, you know, well, at the beginning of Return of the Jedi, you know, Luke's all in black. He's a little more fierce. He's a little more tough. You know, it's, you're
he force
meant
chokes
to sort of,
two of the guards with no thought for
meant,
it.
You're meant to think, like, has he gone dark? And I get that now, but, like, I definitely didn't get that when I first watched it at all.
No, it didn't even cross my mind.
Yeah, that's not even a thought that I had. I was like, oh, Luke's cool.
Exactly, yeah. I was like, oh, yeah, he's tough now.
Yeah, like, I didn't even know if that was, like, a good or bad force power. And I think that's... maybe being an adult watching these movies, sometimes those are the details that you don't catch as a youngling.
Yeah, I guess though it's like I would almost prefer if they kind of signaled that, like if they want to make movies that believe me, I'm not accusing the original trilogy of being like super subtle, you know, like it wasn't.
Right.
It was made for like a populist audience and mainly children. And so if they wanted to make this movie for that as well, and they wanted to like kind of telegraph things or signal them more, that would make more sense to me. To me, it just, the through line like wasn't there. And to me, what's so strange is that the most interesting parts of this movie were the things that, well, this isn't strange, obviously, but were the things that they brought from The Last Jedi. The Rey and Kylo dynamic is still the most interesting aspect of this entire trilogy. I really liked that they introduced this kind of like new force idea of like them being a dyad. Like they are like a duo that comes along once every few generations, that like they are supremely connected. And I thought that that was like super, super interesting. They did really interesting stuff, whether people will like it or not, with how like they dealt in space and how they interact, like, and physically manifest in each other's locations.
That was that was a cool force ability when she was, he was able to grab that necklace.
Well, and the lightsaber. Yeah, so,
and they have a lightsaber because fight when they're not in the same place.
Yeah, exactly.
But then they also transfer the lightsaber from one place to the other.
Yes. So there's like interesting things like that. But there was so much time like doing, like, to me that should have been the main focus of the movie, and then everybody else could have been dealing with, you know, like the rebellion stuff. But there was so much time, like, it just felt so lopsided how much time was being spent on certain things. The pacing was very odd.
I also
you talked about how there's not enough to really have Rey be tempted. We don't fully get even that temptation when she's with Palpatine. I don't think we really had enough of, okay, this is why Ben has now made his turn to the light, or why Kylo has made his turn to the light. It's the scene with Han, and that scene being completely reminiscent of the scene in Force Awakens, it didn't give me enough to say this is why it worked this time, when it's the Force ghost of Han, or memory of Han.
I saw that as, if Rey had the ability to heal physically, I saw that as Leia using her ability to heal, like, internally.
That's nice.
Yeah, I mean, I would wish that I would have seen it that way.
She obviously did something.
She said his name, and as we've learned in big blockbuster cinema recently, names are all that matter. They're the biggest story point.
I feel like that was kind of symbolic of she was healing his internal pains.
Yeah, I wish that he would have been healing his pains. I wish that like we would have seen something about him change and like some depth to that and some arc in his turn to the light, and to not have that just feels like we really didn't get the conclusion to his story that I would have wanted.
Well, the most compelling part about that to me was Rey's interaction with him. It's interesting because they're so reluctant to like take their foot out of the original trilogy and like step fully into this one, which I think is where I understand that The Last Jedi has Luke and Leia heavily involved. But I think that's where The Last Jedi really succeeds, is that it allows the new characters to move forward. Obviously, it's kind of the theme of the movie. So the Leia thing and the Han thing is touching, but the real touching thing about that scene, and like one of the high watermarks of the movie, no pun intended for me, considering all the waves, is that Rey says to him, "I did want to take your hand. I wanted to take Ben Solo's hand." And that's after she heals his wound. And it's like, that is the emotional moment he needs. Like, that's what the turning point is. Like, lean into that. It doesn't have to be like Harrison Ford comes back and he says the same exact things to him, which are like a nice enough touch from like a writing standpoint. But it's like, does Kylo know that he's saying the same lines? Like, it was like this very strange moment.
Well, it would make sense if it was his memory, then I guess he wouldn't really be making new stuff up.
Well, he did say new stuff. He said something about Leia.
I wasn't trying to make a technical argument. I was just joking.
There was something great about that scene, though, because we see his face, and it's kind of like we haven't seen him like this yet. Like, he's fully lit, and you can tell something's different in him, but that's more of an Adam Driver thing. That's just good acting. Yeah.
And then at the end, he's just kind of wearing like a Gap sweatshirt. He's looking.
He
kind of
takes
cool.
a, well. It's the same. It's the same thing. He's because like, it has like, a hole in it. He just takes the belt off. Yeah. He does look good.
Yeah, he kind of just looks like he's just like wearing great. Something he looks awesome. From. He got like an American Apparel like.
It's rag. It's rag.
I believe
it's
the
rag
term
and
is
bone.
He looks normcore.
Yeah, he looks normcore.
Do you guys think that? So we have the moment late in the film where you have the appearance of all these, you know, Jedi of past generations speaking to Rey, you know, encouraging her to rise, the fire rises. And like bring her so, was that a reference? I don't know.
It was Dark Knight Rises, right? Or something. I thought you were doing
sounded like Bane, yeah.
Oh gosh. Bane. Oh, I didn't even notice. I can't believe it. do you guys think that Anakin was like uber pissed because he like went to the dark side just to learn how to heal people and bring them back from the dead, and like they just Ray and Kylo got it in one.
I think it's funny that they filmed all those people in a room and then they just used their voices. They're all like, yeah, you're going to be in the movie. And they're like, yeah, of course.
Oh, well, awesome. It was the Stormfield because they had the lens cap on.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Big mistake.
Yep.
I couldn't piece all the voices out in that. You know, I knew that they used Ewan, they used Alec, they had Hayden Christensen in there. Liam Neeson.
I got
Freddie Prinze in there. I definitely Ahsoka.
Oh, there was Freddie Prinze in there?
Yep.
He was. Credited. I saw him in the credits. I couldn't have picked him out because there were too many. Look, I think if
Freddie
anything,
Freddie Prinze Jr., right? Not his father, comedian from the 50s.
No, his father was.
I'll tell you what. If that sequence proved anything, it's that we've had a lot of white male Jedi.
Yeah.
Because I couldn't distinguish like a ton of their voices, you know?
You know,
I also thought it was weird how she said, "I am Iron Man" at the end.
That was weird. I didn't quite get it, but I understand it.
There were a lot of theories obviously coming into this movie, and I really wish we would have seen the version with the the other world that Ezra had gone into in Rebels, and we would have had that version of time travel. I thought that we were going to go there, and we didn't.
I thought we were going to go there even up to the last like half hour of the movie when things kind of took a turn. I thought that this is going to be the weird like crux that's going to kind of change what we know on its side, and fortunately that didn't happen. But I was happy with the cameos.
What was the red space they flew through?
That was weird. It was
weird, right?
It's like the hedge mage to the castle kind of thing.
That was bit like the Kessel Run, right? When they were making their way through whatever version of that was in Solo.
Remember when they were talking about light skipping and it was this big part of the opening sequence, like it was going to be a part of the movie and then it wasn't?
Yeah.
Remember how like Finn kept acting like he needed to say something to Rey, like it was going to be a big part of the movie and then it wasn't?
Well, I see that was him telling that he has the Force or that Force sensitivity.
You know, we talked after the movie and I think I had already just sort of mentally checked out on thinking that this could be a good movie. So I really thought they were just going down the bad route of, oh yeah, he's just trying to tell her that he loves her. And that you are right. It was trying to say he was force sensitive, but I was just thinking, oh, well, they made those jokes about, hey, do you have a cute boyfriend in the first movie, The Force Awakens? And JJ's like, oh, the real romance is between Finn and Rey. So Finn's going to profess his love before the end of this movie. That's what I thought was going,
so Finn being force sensitive, totally cool. And they kind of start like inferring toward the end. And this is like a nice idea that like everybody's kind of force sensitive, you know, like, and that's like a cool thing to put forth.
It's the level of midichlorians in your
bloodstream. It was cool. Right. It was cool. The first time it got put forth in the last movie, better. Sorry.
But the thing is that the way it was used for Finn in this movie, and I love that character, I would like to see him get like a really meaningful arc, like say he potentially got in The Last Jedi, but if what it turned into was just like, it was just a screenwriting shortcut, so whenever he like needed to do something, he'd just be like, I have a feeling we should go over there, and it would be like, oh, he's force sensitive, which
I feel
again,
like
for the character is cool. But from a construction standpoint,
that's probably the stuff that came out of George's notes where he's like, well, just have him use the Force.
It's not how the Force works.
It's not how the Force works.
I will say this. George has never written a story so convoluted as the first half of this movie.
So what got me worried at the beginning of this movie was how just fast it was. It felt like I was watching like some kind of recap or something of something I hadn't seen. Like, yeah. It was,
there's almost no spatial continuity for the first hour and a half of the movie.
And it was moving along at a pace that I was like, I don't know if, because my excitement level, first off, going into this movie, I was very excited. I think overall, I really enjoyed my experience watching it, and I'm excited to see it again. My anxiety level was high, and then this movie, the way it started, it was not going down because I was like, what? I don't know what's happening. Like, it was like,
give me a moment to breathe.
Yeah, like, it was not giving me a break.
Well, it also didn't give you that moment of, we've spoken about this on the pod before, where, you know, in The Force Awakens, where Kylo shows up and Poe says, like, who talks first? Do you talk first?
Or I talk first? There was no.
And it's like, you kind of settle in. You're like, okay, like, this is like, the jokes are landing. I can settle into what kind of tone this is. This movie doesn't give you that. And it's not because it's like relentless. It's because it doesn't have a clear tone. And a lot of the jokes don't hit.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, you don't feel comfortable in its hands for a long time.
Well, or ever.
So I actually thought, and I don't know, maybe this is just me being a little bit lame. I thought a number of the jokes landed for me at least well enough. Like, I found myself laughing at some of the upbeats throughout this movie. Mm-hmm. What I didn't find, and maybe it's just because the story was so far from what I expected and kind of far from what I really maybe wanted, the dramatic, the big, you could tell that. Yeah. I mean, it's what's wild to me is I don't know that I've experienced in a movie like this, certainly never a Star Wars movie, I've never experienced, like, when a movie is cut and shot and scored for a big moment and it doesn't hit you at all. That's a weird feeling.
Yep.
Because there are, like, big
feeling. Yeah,
that happened to me a couple times.
Naked. And that they're naked. Yeah. And that everyone around you is naked.
Sam, I do agree. You are lame. No, I'm just kidding. The jokes landed for me as well, but that feel what you just said there, that is something I was kind of conscious of throughout the movie. It just wasn't like with a Star Wars movie, the music, the visual, and the thought all hit at the same time. And that's like a stroke of genius. Like, those things, when those three things hit, the music, the visual, and the feeling at the same time.
When
you're like
when Rey gets a lightsaber in The Force Awakens. Yes,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. You're in
still
it.
Maybe the best moment of this era.
Yeah, exactly. That feeling, they were just always a little bit off of each other, and they would approach it every now and then, but it never quite hit that sync. And maybe I just haven't found it. I don't know yet.
I think it has to do with the pacing, honestly, because it's like, I know it wasn't purposefully relentless, but it was relentless in pace where you didn't get these moments of ebb and flow of like, we're calm, we're tense again, we're calm, we're tense again. So and because everything's moving so fast, it's hard for any of the emotions, also because they're not set up to feel earned. Like, so after Leia dies, and, like, obviously there's a lot of emotion there because Carrie Fisher has passed away, there's a scene with Poe where he's saying, like, I wasn't ready to become a general. Like, and you're dealing with a very, like, emotional idea, a very tied into a real-life emotional experience because Carrie Fisher's gone, and a great actor in Oscar Isaac. But even in the scene, it butts up right against the scene before and after it. There's no, like, breathing time. There's no time for him to be thinking. And it feels like Oscar Isaac is, like, trying to be emotional.
Yeah, it's
kind of
like, it's like him in a room. Yeah, that kind of stuff did pop out. I mean, good on us, though. All of the Carrie Fisher scenes, those were pretty seamless. I was very happy with it. It was pretty well done. And I was not pulled out at all. Like, I honestly didn't, like, I wasn't thinking about that aspect of it. So I bravo to them on that kind of filmmaking level to honor her memory.
Chris, I wish I would have felt the same, because I thought it looked really seamless, but I couldn't help, by just knowing that they had to fit these scenes in, that I was like, okay, they wrote the rest of the scene around the fact that she says this. And so I couldn't help but watch that.
Interesting.
That to me is just like movie editing, though. Like, there's a lot of scenes.
I mean, they do that with
Bruce
Willis, and he's alive.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of movies that are just made in the edit to make sense.
You're absolutely right. It's just hard to not think about it when we knew it was so public that they were taking scenes from another movie.
Exactly.
Well, I also have a theory that maybe it wasn't entirely that it was also a little bit of they did lip syncing VO with a sound alike. So they had footage of her saying one thing, and you know, if you're clever enough and good enough with it, it still is what you're saying, Mike, that it needs to be written around a certain cadence and stuff. But like, I'm thinking that some of what she said in this movie was not the, you know, true audio and clip from previous shooting, that it was a little bit of trickery to make her say something else with the same mouth movements shot.
I'll admit it. I did the voiceover.
When you go, listen, you eagle-eared folks.
Yeah. Yeah.
A couple little things I just want to mention and call out. You know, we talked a lot about Kelly Marie Tran. Where's Rose? Rose was completely sidelined. She had nothing to do in this movie. That was
to the point
really
that she says, like, someone's like, "You want to come with us?" And she's like, "Nah, I can't."
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a bit of a bummer.
For no reason. And then Hux being not only, well, I mean, I liked the moment of, like, I'm the spy. That was kind of funny to me.
Yeah.
But the fact, and I wanted even more about why he was the spy. But the fact that he becomes the secondary general to Allegiant General Pride, which I Richard E. Grant, great. Thank you. I'm happy to have him in the movie. I have no problem with that. I just felt like it was another JJ choice of, well, you treated Hux like crap in The Last Jedi, so I don't want him around anymore, so let's just dispatch him and kill him.
Hux actually had like a good amount to do in The Last Jedi.
Yeah, you so I don't
well,
think
I know,
he was...
but I think if you Hux was treated poorly, as in he was the butt of a lot of jokes, and if you
for sure.
If you had created Hux as a character and then felt like Hux wasn't treated well in your eyes, you would then take him out of the movie.
Hux
that's
was never this
theory,
like domineering.
I don't know about
presence.
That logic. I don't know about that logic. I mean, I think if he's the butt of jokes, I think fans would want him in the movie.
Well, I guess part of my logic there is that just having heard that J.J. Abrams really likes to focus on characters he's created, and one of the reasons why I can see why Rose was pushed to the sidelines. That's not a J.J. character, and so she's not in the movie very often, and I just was thinking that this also seems like something he would have done with Hux, because Hux wasn't the same character he had created in The Force Awakens.
I see what Mike is saying, and Mike, correct me if I'm wrong, I'm just kind of elaborating here. Hux in the first movie, he's like the one that gives the big speech, like, to that sacred fleet, that whole thing. He's like this big dominating presence in the First Order. Then in The Last Jedi, he's kind of used for jokes and like kind of a little more buffoonish.
Yep.
You know? And like scheming. He's a little more of a, like a worm tongue kind of guy.
He's a toady.
So, and then in if JJ has to use him because he's still there, instead he just blows him away and has Richard E. Grant the character
leap. You're making the leap that he's disappointed with Hux.
Yeah, so he's just like, that's not the general I need. I made a new one, and he'll just shoot this one. And now Richard E. Grant will be playing the version of Hux that I would have
very
done.
Very funny.
Yep.
Post-Empire, I made the prediction that Hux would be a turncoat.
Post Empire,
post Last Jedi
on May 26, 1980.
After I said there will be a character named Hux, so I was like, I was a little pleasantly surprised that he was a spy. It happens a lot in the series, the cartoons, so I expected it would probably happen in the movie or later.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, it was cool, and then he was shot 5 seconds later.
Well,
and that's never spoken about again.
But it shows that Hux is in the movie for like 3 minutes total across all of men.
No, I know, but it's like, why? Why did they need to reveal that Hux was the spy if it didn't pay off and we already knew that they had a dead spy?
I don't know.
That's what I'm
saying.
I'd
rather that happen than nothing happen.
I thought there was a mistrick by like not bringing him along.
Yeah.
You know, like I thought if they'd put him on the Falcon, the idea of like giving him the opportunity.
Well, you all said
they already had one odd man out with C-3PO and his erased memories.
When I suggested that, you guys all said, no way, he's murdered a lot of people. There's no way he could be with them.
Hey, man, it's the Star Wars universe. People let go of stuff.
Mm. But it was another.
You're right.
Another...
You're right, Chris. When it, I don't like it when it's your idea.
Dang it, Sam, you're lame.
It was another reminder to me that having Kylo Ren be the big bad in this movie could have made Hux's story even more interesting. Like, you know what, mm-hmm. Hux? We had that moment in The Last Jedi where he reaches for his blaster to take out Kylo Ren, and I wanted more of that. I wanted, you know, if we're having this moment, and Hux probably still would have needed to be dispatched, probably by Kylo in the end of this movie if it was the case, but where all of the resistance has to find a way to beat Kylo, and Kylo is then wavering to go back to the light, and then Hux is still allegiant in his own way to
that
the
seems
First
like a,
Order.
Mike, that's I think like a, I know what you're saying. Yeah. Hashtag justice for Hux.
Yes, please. I'm with the Russian
trolls.
Wow,
you guys really took a 180 on Hux.
Hashtag release the Hux cut?
Yeah. I think it was justified that he said he just wanted to stop Ren, and we saw that in Last Jedi. I think it was the continuation, the logical continuation of
his story. Yeah, I like that.
Story.
I wanted
but
more
it made
of
it seem like there was going to be some kind of like follow through to that, and then there
that's
wasn't.
That's on you.
just him saying that.
Yeah.
Now I know
yeah,
that
I know.
Hux doesn't like Kylo Ren. Okay,
well,
I knew
Ryan,
that.
Ryan, when the movie's moving at 17,000 miles per hour. For them to devote 15 seconds to one thing, just be lucky you got that.
Man, I have to say this is a slight annoyance, but it did kind of break Star Wars rules a little bit. They played the end credits song during the movie because they needed that emotional moment at that time.
Which part did they play it? I guess I just this is part of
it's
my
when it's
usual
when he was like,
I can't hear the music for whatever reason. First
well,
time I watch it,
well, Mike, Poe was like, "I'm sorry, I thought we had a shot. There's just too many of them." And then Lando's like, "There's more of us."
Yeah.
And then they literally play the end credits theme song, which is never
liked
played
to have
during
seen
Star Wars.
That story, Lando
Doesn't
getting all the people. I think that would have been fun.
Him flying over a bunch of planets with a loudspeaker.
They'll do it on,
he's yeah. playing like he's along, playing a duck. You. He's playing a duck whistle. The Quack Attack is back, Jack.
I thought that would have been fun to see. He was having a blast in this.
But, I do have to say, I know I said this. I think it's great that Billy Dee Williams is in this movie. I just don't think that. I think they should have given him a different outfit. That's really what it comes down to.
Well, they did initially, like and then he went back to the old outfit.
I would have loved a scene where if he went into the Falcon and like went in the closet and nothing fit him.
That's something I could relate to.
Yeah, that would have been funny.
That would have been a really funny beat. Or if he was wearing that yellow shirt the whole time, but it was super tight.
Yeah, he's like.
Yeah. Wow. This is a weird one, guys. I feel like we're all, you know, I said it in the intro. It is a bummer to be feeling deflated. I'm very curious with a few nights sleep in between when I start getting, you know, because what this inevitably does is now this is unlocked, you know, I don't know, not that I needed like permission or anything, but like now I'm going to go rewatch them all. I'm going to dive in. Right. I'm going to watch The Force Awakens and everything. And then I'm going to start to get hungry again for like, yeah, but I've seen these. I want the new one that I've only seen once. And then I'll go back and, you know, I'm still, you know,
I think
we just for, you know, for the listeners out there, like who maybe who loved it. That's awesome. That's great. If you're conflicted and kind of like half loved it, like, you know, we're going to love this thing. We're going to love it. We're going to talk about it. You know, in a few months' time, in a few years' time, it's going to settle into whatever its rightful place is for each of us individually, you know, in our internal rankings. I think right now there's just, you know, this particular foursome has been so bullish on The Last Jedi, and we're so excited, I think, by promises that were set up in that movie that unfortunately, whether it was, you know, director, writer, studio driven, whether it was backlash responsive or not, like they pulled away from so much of what we loved, which was, it's just really, it's tough. And it feels super disjointed now as a single story.
Yeah.
What's so funny is that so many people, especially, you know, if you're following the discourse on Twitter and stuff, people are so mad about these movies diverging from the original trilogy. But the thing that I don't like about this one is that it leans too heavily on the original trilogy, mm-hmm. you know? So yeah. It's like, I wanted it to lean more into the new trilogy and become, like, follow the course of becoming its own thing. And
it was,
but yeah. Sam, what you said is important. Like, this is how I feel the night. I think I've established it, you know, over 105 episodes or whatever, that, like, I love Star Wars movies. I love this movie, even if I don't like it that much. Like, it's
yeah.
I want to love it. I'm not out here with my knife sharpened.
For
like,
me,
your knives are not out.
They're not out.
I wish they were. It.
I don't like that. This is how I feel.
For me, no. I've gotten. It's given me a different piece of nostalgia. There was a time with Star Wars where Family Guy was making parodies of it.
We're going to cover those. Yeah,
we'll cover those eventually next year because we'll have nothing left to talk about. But we will. There was a time in Star Wars where they were just slapping Star Wars on any kind of anything and like throwing the characters and doing different stuff because they didn't know what to do with it. And almost a little bit of a dark ages for the franchise. And it was that era where it kind of settles out that, you know what, not everybody likes it. It's a little weird. It kind of almost resets its base. So for me to have this arc when we had such highs with The Last Jedi is like, this is what Star Wars can be. It's going to be really hard to top that. That's like a fully realized of this is what this franchise can be.
And this, The Force Awakens.
And The Force Awakens,
too. It's wild.
Too.
This is from the same man who made
that.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yep.
It is only logical that based on the previous history of Star Wars, that this is how this thing like wraps up for a while. So we're going to have a decade of just kind of quietness, and we'll see the parodies, we'll see the jokes, we'll see all the weirdness, and then Rian Johnson will come out with a movie. We'll get an Obi-Wan series. We'll have these moments that'll peak up again. It's par for the course with Star Wars. Half of the fun is just... Do you realize as Star Wars fans that most of our discourse is whether it's good or bad? Like, that is... like that's our central argument, which is wild for anything. So, it's part of the fun. Never, no story is ever going to be the one you want to hear unless you're making it. So I'm taking it with a grain of salt. I'm excited to see it again. I think I need some more time before I have a fully fledged like opinion. So I think kind of hashing it out on the pod, obviously, has been great.
Yeah, I said it earlier when we were doing our first reaction, maybe even right before that. If I was watching this alone and I didn't have the pod to come back to and talk about it with all of you, I think I would be maybe even more upset. I might turn inward. I might become the dark side version of myself and turn into a troll who actually then lashed out at other individuals. Maybe that's why so many people become trolls on the internet. They don't have their own group of podcast friends to talk it all
right.
through with. And that saves us from the worst version of ourselves.
And you know what? Hopefully it saves our listeners.
And yes. You know what? Like, nothing takes away from the fun we've had. Like, and again, I'm not saying definitively, this is where we fall in the Rise of Skywalker. We saw it 20 minutes ago. But I really liked this trilogy. I will truly miss the characters in it. You know, like that's the emotional part to me. You know, I had said my goodbyes to the original cast back in 1983, 4 years before my birth. But but I really loved the new cast and the new characters. And, you know, I mean, they're saying this will be the last one they do. Who knows? But assuming that they're telling the truth, I will miss that. And that is an emotional thing. You know, there's been the last 5 years or whatever. And you know, whether the conclusion was the satisfying conclusion or not, it's not the definitive thing. You know, we still have we're Last Jedi fans, we still have the throne room sequence. We still have the joy of The Force Awakens and Rey getting the lightsaber in the snow. Like, there's so many things that it gave us. It's like, so
honestly,
what if the last one, like, wasn't what I was hoping it would be? So?
Honestly, we kind of joked about it before. I think, you know, if over time, if we really find we, you know, we can't get over the flaws we're seeing in this movie, we don't want to watch it a lot. I think that Last Jedi, it gives you a pretty satisfying ending to the new, like, it
just stopped there. You know? Hey, there's a machete order. Maybe it's time to bring out the reverse machete order.
Yeah. I mean,
also,
you're not kidding.
Chris, the opening 5 minutes, as you may, as we all noticed,
yeah,
opens with the tale of Darth Plagueis.
Yeah, right?
The dark side and offers some things that people may consider unnatural.
I almost looked at you and spoke it aloud. I did clap when Snap blew
that
up.
Was so funny. Oh. You guys didn't know this because you weren't sitting next to Chris, but when Snap Wexley got shot down, Chris tried to start an applause break in the audience.
Oops. Did
the,
I do
it
that?
It would have been the only one. The audience we saw this with was
a bunch of, well,
it was weird.
So during the kiss, we got some good wolf howls.
Oh, yeah,
on our side.
They kiss. Okay.
Yeah,
Kylo and Rey kiss.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Ugh, we haven't even talked about
that.
That was wild.
I was cool with that.
Wait, really?
I wasn't.
Yeah, I wasn't
cool
with the
it.
Fact that he immediately died and disappeared, and they just like moved past it.
They couldn't give us too much of that.
They couldn't give us two more seconds of just dealing with that. I mean, he was a co-lead of the trilogy. He kisses her, and then he literally just falls down, disappears, and she kind of like shrugs it off. And the next thing we see is just her smiling as she's flying an X-wing.
I just think it's weird that he kissed his cousin. Because at the end of the movie, she says she's a Skywalker. Yeah, she says she's a Skywalker.
Wait, which, by the way...
Yeah, well, if she says she's a Skywalker, her parents are brother and sister.
Yeah, exactly. Which, why are the two of them looking on when her mentor was Han more so than Luke? It should have been Han and Leia.
Why isn't Ben there?
He
should have been there, too.
I didn't like the kiss. Am I the only one?
No, I didn't like the kiss at all. Ryan was talking about the fact that the Chewbacca metal scene was meta. This moment of actually catering to the fans of Reylo's to have the kiss, I don't like it. I'm not saying that.
I disagree. I disagree because I think that their connection was earned.
Well, see, but
I think their connection was earned.
But I don't think this story in the moment, it reminded me of Harry Potter Part 2 Deathly Hallows. They have to kiss, so they kiss. It's not a story-earned moment in
that
part of the story.
I haven't read any of the books, but I did see all the movies. It's the opposite of Sam.
But it just didn't seem like a natural fit for them to kiss there.
It was a little odd. I didn't mind it. It was kind of a disposable moment for me. It's not like a scene I was waiting for to happen.
Which think about what you're saying. You know, this is like the two co-leads of the new Star Wars trilogy kiss in the end, and it was kind of a disposable moment. There's something moments in this did not land on the first viewing.
I'm not saying that I needed them to kiss. It would have been satisfying if they didn't. I'm saying is the kiss I didn't mind.
You didn't care
what
about
was
it, yeah.
very unsatisfying was that one of them dies and they just move right on past.
Well, that was probably the safest move to do. Like, have them kiss and then there could be no type of any kind of emotional complication because he dies immediately. So then you're like, oh, well, I guess they just liked each other, but he's dead, so it can't work out. So you don't have to worry about that.
You know what, Chris? Like Rey's pregnant. Now what?
Yeah, exactly. So, like, it basically answers, it just like, not lops off a million questions that everyone would have. Like, oh, it doesn't matter, he's dead.
I found Chewie getting a medal absolutely maddening. Not because I don't think Chewie deserves a medal.
Wow.
But because it put a meme in the movie.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
No one within the world of the movie, I know this sounds ridiculous, within that scene, no one was getting medals. What, like, so it's not like everyone got a medal at the end and they gave one to Chewie and like lingered a shot, even though that'd be like a little obnoxious too. And again, Chewie deserves
wasn't
a medal.
Wasn't that the medal though that was been handed through the three movies or something?
No, Leia had it earlier in the movie, and that's the only thing that you could say is they handed him the medal to have it as a remembrance of Leia. Because it was something that Leia was holding earlier on.
Didn't we see
in
that
movie
in another? Didn't we see that medal in another movie?
Well, yeah,
though?
It's from the original trilogy. It's from
Star Wars. I know that, but didn't we see it in the new trilogy? I thought.
No, I don't think so at all.
Oh,
I think
all I'm saying is, if they wanted it to be an emotional moment, they didn't give it that. They gave it a wink at the camera.
I feel like I hear you. I feel like we saw that medal though in this new trilogy before that moment.
I don't think so.
Chris, didn't we see it in Last Jedi?
You know what? Did we see it with Luke's all of Luke's stuff in the Last Jedi?
Yeah, I think we saw it in Last Jedi. That's why I thought it was kind of like passing. It wasn't like a new medal. I thought it was like passing on
one of the older medals.
I believe it's in The Last Jedi.
It's definitely not a new medal. It's definitely Han's medal, which had gone then to Leia.
Like, yeah, that's what I thought.
That,
see, like, so Chewie didn't even get his own medal. He just got Han's hand-me-down medal.
In classic style. Also, Chewie's got a family. I'll tell you what, one choice that I really wanted, and I was kind of bummed they didn't do it, was I thought that they would never have done this. But if Rey would have actually killed Chewbacca.
It would have been more interesting than what they did do. Which
I was like, as soon as I saw that, I was like, oh, there's no possible way they're going to have the main character of this Disney movie kill Chewbacca.
But there was no reason for them to even imply that she did.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, he was rescued 5 minutes later, consequence.
That's like giant syndrome, right? Where the giant invades the town and picks up something that it loves and like crushes it.
This just felt so much like they were writing a first draft and they were like, we can go back and fix that. And then 20 pages in, they were like, you don't have time to fix it. So they were like, Chewie's not dead, and how do we get him on the Star Destroyer?
Definitely didn't come from the writer of the Justice League movie. That's all I'm saying.
Again, I'm not putting this on Chris Terrio. He's written good things before. You know what I mean? Like, it's like Justice
or how about
League
the fact
be
that
how
was,
anyone's judged.
It was the ship that her parents left her on when she left Jakku, but they really discover nothing in the ship, and it's just mentioned later that she's a Palpatine, but there was no point to them being on the actual ship that was used by her parents to leave.
It is ridiculous. In the Star Wars universe, it comes down to like last name, like almost like a mailbox address. Oh, you're a Palpatine. Like, it is pretty weird.
She's like, well, the last guy was wrong, and why are you right?
They could come up with some kind of Star Wars universe way of like phrasing your last name, but it was like,
also not for nothing.
You're a Palpatine.
You're not for nothing. Like, if you're just going by this trilogy, that's a name that's never been said before.
Yeah.
No one goes like, you mean the old emperor? Wasn't he a senator once?
Hey, do you remember that senator and he disappeared? But then
like, if they're making it for like a new generation, which they should be, if they're going to say Palpatine, maybe give that some context.
Here's one other fact that I think we all need to point, and it's probably on everyone's mind, that when Palpatine is stealing... He goes Darth Sidious, Palpatine, and what,
Zombie
the Emperor.
Palps.
He has many names. When he's stealing their power, he not only transforms his skin.
His shirt.
He's got a nice red. Like red
like
velvety shirt.
Like
yeah. His shirt turned into wallpaper somehow. I don't know what happened there, but he was wearing like a weird smoking jacket.
He looked like he was out of Coppola's Bram Stoker's Dracula.
Yeah, or he's hanging out with Hugh Hefner earlier or something.
Speaking of Coppola, we should all the other thing everybody's wondering that maybe everyone should be asking is Babu Frick offensive to Italians?
I just assume that was Francis Ford Coppola.
You know who really got the short end of the stick on this one? Claude.
Poor Claude.
Claude went to hug Dominic Monaghan, and I thought maybe this will be the LGBTQ relationship everyone's talking about.
Yeah,
that'd be cool.
Yeah.
But then Claude? it was too nice.
He was the alien slug looking guy.
Why was Dominic Monaghan even in this movie?
I think it's because
he's friends with Grunberg there.
Yeah.
You know, it's like,
how much fun must have been though for Greg Grunberg? To be like, oh, you're gonna blow! Like he probably wanted, he definitely wanted to be blown up.
What are you talking about? If I was an X-wing pilot, I'd want to do the like sparks behind my head. Like,
yeah,
but he 100% wanted a Disney Plus series, and now he can't have it.
Grunberg?
Yeah, of course he wanted a Snap.
There's a lot of time.
Disney Plus.
There's a lot of time.
You know what?
Between.
He can hold out for Heroes Reborn.
I think we've come to the end of this first conversation about The Rise of Skywalker. We'll have
one
more to talk about. I think I want to leave us, though, with, you know, what we've been saying a few times throughout this podcast. It has really been the journey of all of us coming to this point of watching majority of the sequel trilogy together. We've done The Last Jedi, Instant Reaction. Now we've done The Rise of Skywalker, The Force Awakens. We were not all doing this podcast. But to have spent the last 2.5 years doing this has been a real pleasure, and I look forward to continuing the conversation onward, even when moments like this come up where there's a lot of divisiveness about this film.
And I have to say, I'm scrolling through Twitter with the hashtag Rise of Skywalker just to see what people are writing.
Oh boy!
And to end on a positive thing, as we're saying, what a magical thing Star Wars could be, regardless of how we feel about the movie. A kid here wrote, it looks like he's, I'm not going to say his name, but it looks like he's probably 19 or 20 years old. He wrote, Rise of Skywalker, 10 out of 10, worth beating cancer for. So,
oh, wow.
You know what? Wow. It brought joy to his life today.
There you
and
go.
And that's a beautiful thing. That's what Star Wars can do.
There you go. There you go.
So, that makes me emotional. That makes me more emotional than anything in the movie.
I can't wait. To keep going, I think we're really the Disney acquisition ensured that this franchise will live on and continue producing movies every couple of years, which means this pod ain't going anywhere, babe.
Right?
We're gonna have the four of us. This is an ongoing conversation for years to come. And Mike, you said it perfectly. It's been an absolute pleasure thus far, and will continue to be.
Pan down. Ray, your story is not over. You have the ability to rewrite time in Star Wars.
Yes.
The Rise of Skywalker Part 2.
This time we get it right.
This time it's personal. Oh, one final thought. I did love the Finn moment where he's like, yeah, that's nice. This droid has one final thought at the end. Did that hurt? Did she build that lightsaber? This is just a question. She buried the two, then she pulled out that one.
Did she build that out of? Did she go back to the Endor moon and find? Was it built out of pieces of Kylo Ren's lightsaber?
No, it was built out of her staff.
I don't think so.
It looks like her staff.
Oh,
it was built out of her staff.
Oh, that's why it looked familiar.
That's what it was.
I couldn't tell what that object was. I was like, did we find that in the movie?
That's cool. That's cool. It was made out of her staff. You know what? I take it back. The movie was great. Also, I liked Dio didn't get a lot to do, but I thought that he was a surprisingly sad droid. that was very emotional. Clearly had been abused. And was like not okay.
No.
And he was very sweet and I liked him very much. Or her. I don't know. You know, it may have been a her.
Guys, I think we did it for tonight. A gambit of emotions here.
Three more hours.
I could talk about this all night. I just want to tell our listeners, please give us your thoughts, droidspod@gmail.com. Twitter @droidspod, Instagram @droidspod. You go to YouTube, search droidspod. Watch Ryan's The Fall of Jedi. What a Jedi Fallen Order playthrough. There was a reference to that game in the movie too, wasn't there? I believe there was. I can't think of it now, but there was. Yeah, there was a reference to it. Some
Chris
activity.
Is positive of it. He has no idea what it was and can't name it.
There was something
also
that they
hasn't
did.
Were they running on walls in one scene that I missed?
It was when everybody was sliding on that ice.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, remember when Ray was sliding down those ice things for and dying 100 times? Watch Ryan's playthrough on there. You can email us, droidspod@gmail.com. Please let us know your thoughts. This is the time. We would love to hear conflicting opinions, agreeing opinions, any kind of opinion, really. What'd you eat at the theater? Lots of theaters you can eat at. I didn't find it as distracting as I was fearing that I would. I enjoyed it, and perhaps I ate too much. So,
well, you'll get a chance to do it all again tomorrow, Chris.
Exactly. Yep, we're going tomorrow morning, so we'll see what happens.
Well, on that note, enjoy whatever meal you have when you watch the movie for a second time. This has been The Droids You're Looking For, a Star Wars podcast. What they throw?
Babu? Annie?
I'm saying when the Palpatine does it, it's all right.